Mickey, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. I am really excited. I have been excited for months about doing this class. Knowing how to ask for what we want and doing it in a way that moves everything forward is absolutely key to creating a life that works for us and for others around us. So I'm really jazzed about the possibility of sharing this. I'd like now to come back to a sense of purpose of why this call, why this topic, and why people have chosen to participate. And I'd like to hear from five people, what brought you to want to take this class? I want to hear from people who have something that is meaningful for you about the topic, and then listen to what was said before so that if you say something, it will be something different so we have a range of things. So now I'm going to pause and ask whoever has something that you'd like to share about what you're hoping to get from this class, from engaging with this topic. That would be helpful for me to hear that, possibly for others as well.
Well, this is Ina. I'm in Brooklyn, New York. For me, request is the clincher. It's the hardest thing, and without it, the whole thing doesn't work in terms of NVC.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quite sensitive to feelings and needs, but framing a request, for whatever reason, that's the hardest part. As I understood the topic, that's what we're going to be working on some.
Yeah. Thank you, Ina. Another person with anything that is different from what Ina said.
My name is Kathy. I know how to do these connecting requests, like would you tell me how that landed for you, or can you tell me what you heard? But when it comes to actually asking what I need for myself, I find that very, very difficult, and I feel very awkward and hesitant to do that. That's what I'm hoping to get from this, is to really be able to step into my ability to speak and ask for what's so for me.
So you mean something like, let's say you have a conflict with someone around who will do the dishes. You can navigate the conflict for as long as you're just hearing each other's needs and how do you feel about that and all of that. But when it comes time to make an actual request about what's going to happen with the dishes, that's when it gets hard for you.
Yes. And inside of myself, I feel kind of tied up in knots around that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Can you just say for a second, what is the thought that ties you up in knots?
That it's not going to be well received.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm asking for isn't going to be well received.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm seeing that you and to some extent Ina are already starting to speak about the topic itself of today, which is what makes it so hard to make requests. And one of the things is the fear that it's not going to be well received. So we'll come back to that later. Thank you, Kathy.
This is Lisa from Minnesota. I find that it's very difficult for me to make requests without them sounding to myself like a demand and often to the other person like demand. And also I am now losing my job and looking for a new vocation, and it seems like the ability will be very important.
So you want to ask for what you want, but you want to find a way to ask it in a way that will really hold the request energy internally and towards the other person.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Lisa.
Hi, it's Brita from Canada. My partner and I, we're both on the line together. We have a four-year-old. As a parent, we struggle sometimes. He has very beautifully large energy, but sometimes that energy moves into hitting other children or doing some other activities that we both feel quite sad about, and we do make requests to him to hands off other people or things like that, or about yelling at other children, but we struggle because the behaviors continue, and it's hard because we want to stay in that energy of connection, but we also want everyone to be safe.
Yeah.
And we want to be heard.
Mm-hmm. So it's a specific kind of situation of what to do when there's something that is really important to you, and the other person, whether they're 4 or 60, continues to do something that is painful for you. I'm trying to generalize from it to a larger applicability for other people listening. So did I capture the dilemma accurately?
It did for me.
Yes. Okay. Soraya, hi.
Yes, hi. I'm from Los Angeles. My question is the cultural component in making requests. I come from an Asian culture where there's a lot of respect for hierarchy. When someone says, do this, it means a lot of trust and love and faith when you make a request, but it sounds like a command. How do you go beyond the cultural challenges in making a request and still not sounding as you are making a command?
Wow, thank you so much. So I have a tiny preliminary map of what people are bringing with them to this call. And so I want to now move to giving you a little picture of where I want to go with it, and then I'm going to start engaging with people more in depth. Today, I am planning to cover, through interaction with you, two aspects around requests, actually maybe close to three. One is the question of what makes it so difficult to make requests. And it's already started, you've already started alluding to it, and I'm going to work with some people to uncover what that is. And then after that, I want to look a little bit at the question of power and how it relates to requests. Part of my passion for wanting to teach a class about requests is that this is the place where I have a sense we have the most power in creating the life that we want, is in finding a way to make requests, both of ourselves, but primarily of others, that will really support us and everyone else in meeting needs. And that kind of power requires a lot of inner strength, courage, and a willingness and a capacity to mobilize resources well, effectively, and lovingly with everyone. We'll talk a little bit about what makes requests more or less powerful by reviewing everything that those of you who have been practicing NVC for a while have learned about requests, but through this lens of power. And for the people who haven't had such extensive study of NVC, this may be a first exposure. So those are the three things that I'm intending to do today, to really take a look at what makes requests difficult, what do I mean by power, and why are requests such a powerful source of movement towards meeting needs, and some of the aspects that make requests more powerful if we pay attention to them. Think of a request that you want to make that is challenging for you to make, and what makes that request hard or challenging to make a request? What makes it challenging for you to make a request that you want to make of someone? Anybody reflected on it and want to get more into it now?
Hi, this is Mary in Oakland. A lot of times I go into a place of worrying that the other person isn't going to be able to say no. I'm afraid that they won't be able to say no, so then I'm afraid to ask because I don't trust, I guess, them.
It's being afraid of somebody giving you a half-hearted yes and then paying consequences later. Is that what it is?
Yes.
It might be helpful for you to have some ways of what to do if somebody says yes and you don't trust it.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing that you do is you just don't ask.
If I don't feel like the person can say, you know, that they're going to be comfortable saying no, or I preface it with, well, you can say no, or I hope you'll say no if you really don't want to do this. I think it dilutes it and... But that's how I feel. I want to tell them that they can say no.
And
which, of course, they can say no. It's my thing, not theirs.
Yeah. Is it because of care for them or because of fear of the consequences down the line?
I think it's more of care for them because I don't want them to do something they don't want to do. I don't think too much about the consequences down the line.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to leave you and everybody else with a challenge of how can we ask for what we want in a way that holds that care in how we ask, but without what I'm hearing you doing, which is sort of almost like diminish the importance of your needs.
Yeah.
Because what is most at the core of the practice of NVC is this radical idea that my needs and your needs are equally significant. Neither one is more. And how to live that in practice, this is, you know, referring back to what Ina said that I agree with, the practice of making requests is absolutely key to being able to stay in dialogue and move forward towards solutions that work for everyone. If you don't ask for what you want and you leave yourself perpetually with your own needs not being met, you are in some sense out of the picture, and then at most the other person's needs will be met, but only some of them, because their need for caring for you is not going to be met if you don't give them a chance to do what you want. Did you catch that last piece, Mary? Did it make sense to you?
Yes, that actually makes a lot of sense. That's a good thing to remember.
Nikki, this is Ina. I just feel that's so important that I want to hear or reflect it, that last piece. In diminishing our requests, not to mention not even making them, we're depriving the other person of an avenue to express their care for us.
Yes.
Their desire to contribute to us. I think this is something that doesn't live strongly in me, the belief that others, let's say, are awake to that desire.
Yes. I know that I derive great joy from contributing to other people's lives. And I want to give people the gift of that joy, of being able to contribute to my life.
Mm.
Thank you, Ina. Thank you, Mary. Line is open for other people. What makes it difficult for you to make your requests?
My name is Kathy. It's embarrassing to admit this, but for me, I get confused with the idea that if people say no to me, that they don't love me,
yes,
and that I'm being abandoned.
Thank you.
So it's so painful to have that experience that I hesitate to ask, because I don't want to feel those painful feelings.
Yes, I am so grateful to you, Kathy, for plunging into the vulnerability of sharing this, because I'm so confident that you're not alone.
Nikki, this is Steve in Miami. I wanted to agree with the last concern that was just expressed, that vulnerability. And also, I feel the fear that if I make a reasonable request and I make it as a request in a gentle way, that if I get a very harsh, angry response, that then I will become angry.
Uh-huh. So I wasn't actually done with the previous one. I'm hearing that you have something to add to that, but I had a couple more things that I wanted to say. Can you hold for a second?
Sure.
This fear of no is something that I have thought a fair bit about. And I'm very grateful to you, Kathy, for articulating it in such a stark way. If somebody says no to me, I hear that to mean that they don't love me. I just can't imagine saying it in a more pointed way. It's so clear the way you said it. I've thought about this a lot over the years while teaching people, that there is something in the word no that is so painful for so many people to hear. This is part of why we also teach people, I and I know other trainers do, how to express a no in a way that never uses the word no. Because what happens when you hear no, you don't hear the other person's interest in supporting you. It sounds entirely different if somebody were to find a way to convey to you, you know, I'm very interested in your well-being and in finding a way for you to get your needs met. The particular thing that you asked me to do is not going to meet my own needs to do it, but I would be happy to talk with you about what else you can do. Something to that effect would convey the no without conveying that they're not with you. The reality is that the overwhelming majority of people haven't studied NVC. So when they say no, they themselves may not even be aware of all of that and certainly don't have the tools for expressing it differently. And we will do this specifically focus on this fear of no and what to do with it. So next week we will look at length at if somebody else says no, one of the things for us to do is to hear their care for us by imagining what their needs might be that would prevent them from saying yes. I used to work with couples, which I don't do anymore. One of the things that I often did with couples when there was some heated issue and one of them was saying all these horrible things about the other, I would give them this exercise. Tell a story about why this other person is doing what they're doing, which is something you really don't like, something that is really painful for you. Tell a story about why they're doing it in which they come out looking like they care. That's the only rule of the story. They have to look at the end of it like they care about you. And it was a very powerful exercise for people to reimagine each other's care. Kathy, I'm wondering if what I'm saying touches at all on this fear for you.
Very much. That strategy of telling the story is really helpful because it's like I just am wanting so much to know that people care, and why not make up the story so that I feel good rather than feel bad?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. We will also work next week with what we can do inside to be less attached to what we ask so that we can hear a no and stay open to continue to dialogue. So thank you, Kathy. And then it was Steve?
Yes.
And you were talking about you're afraid of your own reaction. If the person says no, how you can stay open-hearted to the dialogue. Yeah?
Yes.
I think I may have addressed some of your concern and certainly will address the rest of it next week. Just what to do inside so that I can receive the no in a way that doesn't diminish my own capacity to stay present. I also want to say that earlier we heard from another person the exact opposite fear. Fear of hearing a yes when the person actually wants to say no. What to do with half-hearted yeses. And we'll work with that too as we go. But look at this amazing bind. I want something. I won't ask you for it because either you'll say no, which will be horrible for me, or you'll say yes and I won't trust the yes. So I don't leave any room for me or for you to discover the truth and work together. Thank you all for that. I want to hear if there's anybody else who has any other aspect that makes making requests difficult for you.
This is Barbara in California. Sometimes I am struggling with trying to make requests that are doable.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to deepen sort of what I'm looking for is deepening my practice for self-connection so that I can find some of the more subtleties about what I'm really needing so that I can actually express it as a doable request.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Barbara, because what you're pointing to is something that a lot of people at first don't notice, and maybe not at all. Observations, feelings, and needs in a very real way are finite, meaning if you're going to observe something, something already happened. You're just describing it. Reality limits the options because it just happened and you just are observing it. If you're looking for feelings or needs, you have lists that you can consult, and the lists are finite. They may not be 100% comprehensively exhaustive, but at least they get you a long way towards knowing what your feeling and need might be, and they're finite. But when you come to making a request, there is nothing outside of yourself that can help you, nothing to guide you. You have to find it inside, that clarity, and it's completely unbounded by anything. So how will you know what to ask for? How will you know how to make it doable? How will you know how to put it in words? How will you know what will meet your need? It can be quite overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Barbara, I wanted to hone a little bit more your question. Are you, you know, really taking some time and attention to really make full connection with the need before making the request?
I think in some circumstances, the one circumstance that I'm thinking of in particular when you ask this question, I am probably looking for ways to deepen the connection with my need, because what comes up for me as my request is a request of, for acceptance. And I don't really know that that's a doable request.
It is absolutely not a doable request, and because it doesn't tell the other person what to do.
Exactly.
What does acceptance look like? What will they do? Stand on their head? Will that give you a sense of acceptance?
Exactly.
Or is it open the door? Or is it smiling at you and holding their hands in a particular way? What is it? Do you have any sense of what acceptance looks like?
And, of course, in different moments and different circumstances, it would look different. It would be different.
Yes. So in the very moment that you make the request, that's when you look to see what need am I really trying to meet right now, and what's the action that I imagine will meet my need, the action. We'll cycle back and come back to this question of doability because it ties into the question of power. But I may as well say it now, even though it's not sequential, it's organic. If I don't tell the other person what I want them to do, my power is diminished to create what I want. It's very simple, strikingly simple. And it kind of like turns everything upside down. The way we are habituated to going about our business is to, at best, express a little bit about how we feel, maybe a little bit about how we need. But leaving the power with the other person to try to do something to meet our need without having any clue what it is that we want. Then we leave the power in their hands. And we sit in a victimized, powerless position. I can't do anything about it. I want acceptance. This person won't accept me, so I can't do anything. Whereas if I can really focus on what specific, concrete, positive action the person can do to support me in meeting my need, then I am the author of what is going to happen. The person may say no, but we are already in a process of finding out how to meet both of our needs instead of waiting for the other person to do something. I'm wondering, Barbara, if this resonates with you as an expression of power to know what you want.
Yes.
The person also knows with clarity what it is they're going to say yes or no to. It can be very overwhelming. Remember all the times when somebody came to you and expressed some disappointment or pain or frustration about something without telling you anything of what it is they want from you about it, and how difficult that is to know what to do in those moments. Does this resonate as familiar, Barbara?
Yes.
If I want to give the other person a better experience of our dialogue, if I tell them what I want, that actually supports them in knowing whether that's something they can give me or not. Thank you for bringing in that dimension. It also reminds me of something that my sister in Baal, also NVC trainer, coined this phrase. She calls it a crisis of imagination. of where we are so unfamiliar with thinking in terms of what do I want, who do I want to do it, what's the action that will support me, that we have no imagination left. And it takes the practice of repeatedly exercising that muscle of, even if what we ask for is not going to give us what we want, just practicing so that our imagination starts to catch on with the possibility of asking for different things. Barbara, are you feeling complete for the moment?
Oh, yes, thank you.
I'd like to hear from just one more person if there is anything else that makes requests difficult that anybody has experienced that I have not covered yet.
This is Catherine in Berkeley. I think this may feed a little bit into what one person said about cultural differences earlier.
Uh-huh.
I am culturally disposed to just say what I want, so I don't have trouble with that. And the difficulty comes in that my partner, if I try to go through the sequence of expressing my feelings and needs,
mm-hmm.
if the feeling is a negative one, like frustration or anger or whatever, is being heard in my voice. And
mm-hmm.
if my partner hears it, it gets him in the defensive. If he doesn't hear it, he doesn't believe me that I'm frustrated or angry.
Yeah. It relates to the cultural difference in the sense that he is experiencing human interaction differently in terms of codes of what gets expressed and what things signify.
Maybe.
That's what you mean?
Maybe. I don't know. My problem is not that I don't have trouble asking for what I want. I have trouble doing it in such a way that he doesn't feel bad
mm-hmm.
and rejects it just because he feels bad.
Yeah. So I think that what I'm hearing, the challenge that I'm hearing in what you're saying, does sound to my ears like it's specifically about requests. I'm hearing it more about how to express your feelings and needs in a way that doesn't leak to the other person as blame.
That may be behind it, yeah.
Yeah, because often, if we haven't really practiced to the point of where we can really own our feelings in full without blame, then the only two choices left to us are not to express ourselves at all, or to express ourselves in kind of a numb, disconnected way, which is what you say, he doesn't believe me if he doesn't hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's almost like I'm not hearing that you know how to express the fullness of your experience without it sounding like anger. Does that ring true?
Yeah.
So there's a lot that I could say about this, but it feels a little bit out of topic, and I want to stay on topic, and I'm wondering if that would be okay with you if we leave it only half answered.
Yeah, that has already been very helpful. Thank you.
You are most welcome. I want to say one more thing about the cultural differences. That question that was raised, and I'm glad, Catherine, that you reminded me. I want to be in a bit of dialogue with you about this, because some of this is at the limits of my own practice, and I want to just be transparent about that. Here is as far as I have been able to take this bit about cultural differences. When we are in a monocultural environment, and sometimes I wonder if we ever are in a fully monocultural environment, because there are so many differences even within each culture and even within each subculture. But let's leave that aside for a moment. Being of the same culture to me means that we are likely to interpret behaviors in a similar way. We're likely to try to signify, to put in words and actions who we are in ways that are read by each other similarly. If we are in a cross-cultural interaction, I do something that means something to me, and you hear it, if you're from a different culture, as meaning something else, which is where the misunderstandings and the breakdown in communication start to happen. The difficulty that I have is that what that leads me to conclude is that we need to be more explicit in our communication cross-culturally so that we can help each other understand the hidden meanings. However, there are many cultures in which being explicit is frowned upon. And that dilemma I still don't know how to solve.
Right.
How to work cross-culturally without being explicit about the differences is beyond the edges of my current competence. I just want to hear from you how that is for you to hear, because I do have one more thing to say before I complete with you.
I believe that is an additional challenge. And it's always the endeavor is to be culturally competent even before you express your needs and feelings and requests.
Yes.
So it takes and leads you to another level.
Yeah. And I can tell you, I am a bicultural person myself. Uh-huh. I live in the United States, but I'm not from the United States. I have lived here, next month it will be 25 years. And I can tell you that I have concluded that I will never fully learn the codes of this culture. Even though I've been here 25 years, I don't think of myself as particularly challenged in learning new things. And so I'm not sure that anyone can become fully competent in a culture that's not their own. And so for me, it still remains a dilemma. That said, I want to add something that I think is more personal to you. Given the question that you asked, my sense is that you are already bicultural in your own culture. Is that ringing true for you?
Yes, very true.
And so just the very fact that you say, how can I make a request that will be received in my culture without it sounding like a command, tells me that you see things both within your culture and from outside your culture.
Yes. Yes.
So I can imagine that creates some strain inside of you.
Yes. My culture is very receiving and accepting of my request. My challenge is expressing my request. My culture, I still consider I'm very much Sri Lankan. For me, the difficulty is even when I mean so well and I communicate with a lot of love, it can sometimes be construed as a command or a demand.
So your difficulty is outside your culture?
Yes.
Okay. So in that case, I would say, you know, be explicit and transparent about it. Just say, I would like to ask you something like, I would like to ask you for something. And my experience is that sometimes when I make a request, it sounds to the other person like a demand, even when I don't mean it. So before you say yes or no to my request, I would really like you to tell me if it sounds like a request or a demand first thing. Are you willing to do that with me? And I think that will increase the chances that your love will be heard.
Right. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of work, but yes, I guess that's the only alternative, only way to do it effectively.
You don't have to do it with everybody. I think if you have one or two people that you trust, you can practice with them. And then once you integrate it, you will learn something about yourself.
Yes.
That you can then put into practice.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Thank you, Soraya.
Thank you very much.
I want to conclude and shift to the next part of this call by telling you a story that has affected me very deeply. This is a story about a couple that did extensive research. They wanted to understand what it was that made people rescue Jews during the Holocaust in World War II in Europe. This couple went to Europe and interviewed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, which is really rare when people do social science studies. They interviewed 400 people who rescued Jews during the Holocaust, and I think at least double as many people who didn't. And they tried to find differences. What was different between them? none of the usual things like age, education, income, occupation, religion, none of these usual social science variables showed up in the analysis. There were only two things that showed up in the analysis. Both of them are very relevant to NVC. One of them is very relevant to this topic, this class about requests. But because I know that people are always curious to hear the other one in addition, I will tell you the second one first. The second one is the people that rescued Jews tended to come from households where there wasn't a whole lot of punishment. They were raised with certain kind of values and principles, but not with punishment, which meant that they didn't have fear of consequences as the main thing guiding their actions and choices in life. The second thing, and the one that is so relevant to what we're doing here, is they were asked. In other words, somebody came up to them and said, I need help. Please help me. Please save me. And then they did it. They didn't generally just go out of their way to look for somebody to save. They were approached by people. And this story remains with me as an example of how powerful requests are in the most literal sense, making those requests saved people's lives. I'm saying this because I know that at least in the culture of the United States, and I'm curious to hear if there are people present on the call from cultures where that is different, there is a real prohibition against asking for what you want that people are generally raised with. That's another thing that makes it so hard to ask for what we want, is we go against what we've been told, which makes it very difficult. I'd like to hear from one person who has experienced this, and if hearing this story is giving you some motivation to increase your willingness to risk asking for what you want.
My name is Claire.
And where are you?
Yes. I'm on the Navajo Nation in Arizona. This thing about growing up with a prohibition against asking for your needs to be met, I think that there's, well, in my experience, there's, number one, that somehow you don't deserve your need to be met.
Yes.
And the other is that somehow your need being met will take from someone who may have a greater need.
Oh, thank you for articulating it. Thank you, Claire, for articulating that, because these are two of the ways that the kind of thinking that we have inherited from several thousand years of the way the culture has been going in the world, you have identified two of these great messages that make it so hard to live life in full. One is the message that we don't matter. There is somebody else who is more important. And the other is the message of scarcity. If I meet my needs, somebody else won't. And it really is kind of like a spiritual journey to reclaim and recover our capacity to trust that we matter and that our needs are not in conflict with anybody else's needs. It's a huge spiritual journey that anyone who practices NVC for a while knows you need to traverse it in order to reclaim your full power to create the life that you want. So thank you for putting it on the table. Anything else you wanted to say about that, Claire?
Thank you. No, that's all I needed to say.
Thank you. I want to now shift focus to talk a little bit more about the question of power, and to say that the way that I define power is a very simple definition. It's the capacity to mobilize resources to meet needs. And once I define power in this way, first of all, it becomes immediately evident that everybody needs power. And second, it shows how important it is to make requests, because if I make requests, that is my way of trying to mobilize the resources necessary to meet my needs. And I want to also introduce the distinction between power over and power with, which I'm sure many of you have heard before, so bear with me, but there may be some people for whom this would be new. Once I mobilize resources to meet needs, I can do it in a way that does not pay attention to whether or not your needs are met, and that would be the power over you. I'm going to do what I need to do to meet my needs, whether or not it works for you. I don't have to necessarily actively seek to not meet your needs. I'm just not actively seeking to meet your needs. I'm only seeking to meet the needs that I am interested in, whether or not it works for you. That's power over. Power with that I have to meet as many needs as possible, my own as well as yours, as well as everybody else's, as well as other life forms, as many as I can possibly hold, increasing and increasing and increasing my capacity to interact with life in a way that furthers everybody's capacity to meet their needs. Power over is exemplified by demands. Power with is exemplified by requests. I've said a whole bunch of information, and I want to pause to see if there are any questions before I move forward with this.
I have a quick question about bringing requests into the now, into the present moment, as well as being doable and positive. And I'm wondering if that ties into this whole issue of power in request.
Absolutely. I was planning to talk about that, so I just wanted to stay for a moment with any clarity questions first before moving to new content. Can you hold your question for a bit?
Sure.
Thank you.
This is Hallie, and I have a question that relates to power, and it's it's when you're in a position of power over, how do you make your request not a demand?
Okay, so I want to make a distinction and saying power over is not a position that you have. It's a choice that you make about how you use your power. So as a parent, you have power that your children don't have, in the sense that you have access to certain resources that they don't have. You can use those resources over your children, or you can use those resources with your children. Power is not something you have. Is that clear, Hallie?
It's still hard because, you know, in my case, it's adult children. I have this thing that gets in the way of making a request, which is that I somehow have a right. And I guess...
You have a right?
Yeah, you know, I own the house, you know, therefore you should. Therefore.
Yes. And so saying that you have a right...
Mm-hmm.
Is your attempt to use your power over them.
Yes. But it's hard to get that out of the way.
Yes. Because it is much more vulnerable to say I have a need than to say I have a right. Rights are not vulnerable. Needs are. And power sharing requires more vulnerability than many of us are accustomed to, especially when we are in positions of power. So I want to, while you're chewing on this, I want to cycle back for a moment to the people who have the four-year-old who hits because of this, because you may be saying that you're making requests of the four-year-old. I'm actually hearing it as you're making demands, because I'm not hearing an option for the behavior to continue. Not that I'm liking the behavior. The only loop that I'm hearing is we don't like it, it's not contributing to safety, and therefore it has to stop. What's missing for me in that is an interest in understanding what are the needs of the four-year-old that are leading the four-year-old to hit, and really engaging with those needs and finding some other strategy to meet those needs. If you're just asking for the behavior to stop without leaving that room, that effectively makes it a demand. And I don't know if you're on the line or not. I just want you to chew on it. And I'm wondering if you've come up with anything in your reflection. I'm doing
ping-pong. It's just really hard, you know, when it's sort of an adult child. It's just very hard to say, you know, dirty dishes or whatever, that I don't have the right to say you've got to wash your own dishes. It's just hard.
You don't. You don't have the right to say it.
Yeah.
If you choose to...
Somehow it's hard.
It's hard.
But
so how?
But I hear you.
Just try translating it for a moment.
Well, I need order. I can say that. But.
Yeah, and what would be the request? I want to say one more thing in this moment. I know I asked you a question and you were thinking about responding. I was just finally catching up with your saying that your need is for order.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Yes, you have a need for order. I don't think that is what is leading you to say I have a right. What is leading you to say I have a right has to do with the quality of the relationship between you. It's not about the dishes. Almost every request has behind it the hidden question, do I matter enough? And so that's the place where the reflecting needs to happen. How do you build the quality of relationship with your children of whatever age to where you have the trust that your needs matter? I have a couple more things that I wanted to make sure to touch on today. I'm noticing that we don't have, no, I don't want to say it like this. I really want to make sure that I touch on these things, so I want to shift to them right now. And are you complete for the moment, Hallie?
Wonderful. Yes, thank you.
Did the people with the four-year-old, are you on the line, and do you have any reflection from what I said?
Hi, this is Brita from Canada.
Hi.
And with the four-year-old. I feel excited and happy just being able to talk about this. Also, just reflective, just thinking about, you know, the instances. And there have been instances where I have sat with him and talked with him about what it was he was needing or what was going on for him and you know, really had some beautiful moments with him going through that. But then also some sad moments even the next day where it happens all over again.
Yeah.
And so,
there's
a mixture in there.
Yeah. Do you have a sense that he wants to change those behaviors?
No.
That's the challenge. Until you have reached sufficient connection where you are to, it's going to be you against him.
Yeah.
Something hasn't happened.
Yeah.
He is okay with himself doing this.
He's very okay with himself doing this.
Yeah, so maybe listen to carefully understand what that is. When you presume that it has to be your way, there is less room for him.
Yeah. I feel sad when it occurs, when he hits other kids or...
Yeah.
In that, because I want community for our family. I want...
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I want friends for him and I, you know, I want
yeah,
people
and,
to see him as beautiful as we see him, and it doesn't always happen.
Yeah, and all of this you can communicate to him. I know this because a four-year-old can completely understand all of this. And you can connect and hold the dilemma. I'm not saying that what you're doing is wrong. I just don't know how to meet all of these needs while you are hitting people. And invite him to engage with you on this. How do you see us being able to meet those needs? So I want to leave you with that, if you're okay with that, Brita.
Oh, I am okay with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And now I want to say, as I was sitting and preparing for this class today, I had an insight that came to me, which is really fresh, and I'm not like 100% sure that it's entirely true, but I still wanted to share it because it was very exciting to me, which is that one of the things that is important about making requests is to connect the request to a need. Over the years, I've noticed that the more people connect their requests to needs, the more willingness there is on the part of other people to want to do this. instead of just making the request without connecting it to a need. So connecting requests to a need increases my power with you because it speaks to your desire to contribute. It speaks to your desire to understand what is going on. It speaks to so many of your needs, and so it enhances the power sharing. And I want to contrast that with when we make demands. If we connect our demands to consequences, you know, if you don't do this, this is what will happen, it increases our power over. So connecting a request to a need seems to me increases our power with, and connecting a demand to a consequence increases power over. I'm curious to hear from one person if that rings true or not true for you. Any reaction to this, since this is so fresh?
Hi, this is Anjali in Los Angeles. Yes, thank you. I have a wonderful aliveness hearing that and joy.
Thank you. What I wanted to touch upon next, I can't remember the name of this person when I asked you to hold it about making positive requests. Not positive, making present in the moment requests.
That's Steve.
Hi, Steve. Can you say how you see this connected to power?
I saw it actually connected to one of the first requests from the lady in Los Angeles who sometimes finds her requests are heard as demands, perhaps if they're requested as right now, would you do this right now? And also I see it as connected to the other, was it Mary from Oakland who had said that she's trying to give people space to say no graciously and mm-hmm. perhaps it'd be possible to request, would you be willing to think about this now and perhaps get back to me later after you've had time to think about it?
So you think that can make the connection more powerful?
And more spacious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for this. I hadn't thought of this. I have another aspect of what makes it powerful to do the requests in the moment, which is that if it can be done now and it's done now, it meets needs right away. Whereas if I make a request about the future, who knows if you will remember, if you won't remember, what will happen? Will there be an earthquake or something that will interfere? This way, right now, I'm already mobilizing resources and it's already moving us towards closing loops, increasing connection, and more hope and the possibility of further movement one step at a time. That's the way that I see it as connected to power, the power with, to move towards creating what I want. Lastly, I wanted to restate another aspect. We talked about how important it is to say to people specifically what it is that we want them to do, and certainly focus on the do rather than on the don't. Giving people something positive to do, they know, and something specific to do, they know what we want from them and they can then say yes or no. I am done with what I wanted to say, and I'd like to take one more question or comment and then round things up.
This is Anjali in Los Angeles.
Yes.
This point about mattering, I'm very grateful you brought that up as being sort of a hidden request within
mm-hmm.
all requests.
Yes.
And I would like to know, maybe there isn't time today, but perhaps in the future, how we could perhaps ask or bring that out to get some acknowledgement or some kind of
yeah.
sense of mattering. One idea that I just want to put out about the last comment, and I was thinking if I, like I have a request right now I want to make of a family member to get together and talk about something. But I thought I could ask first is would you be willing to just consider thinking about us getting back together and talking, setting a date. And then that way if the person said yes, I'd be willing to think about it, that would give me something in the moment
yes.
that I could hold on to as a possibility. And it would also, to me, it would indicate you know, for me it would be a language that would say that I matter.
Angeline, I really want to stop you.
Yes.
And I'm sure we'll come back to this, and I want you to hold this. I just want to say a couple of things by way of ending. I want to express my immense gratitude to Mary for making this available. And just, I was talking to somebody earlier today about what an amazing resource this is, the NVC Academy, helping people all over the world learn NVC in places where they couldn't. There is very many options for you to participate. And I, so on this note, I want to express a lot of gratitude to everybody who came forward and made this interactive and lively. Thank you, everybody.